First Baptist Church of Redmond, April 29th, 2018. Know Jesus Understands the Future.
And join me in reading Luke 19, verses 11, 12, and 13. Now, as they heard these things, he spoke another parable, because he was near Jerusalem, and because they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. Therefore, he said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. Thank you. You may be seated.
Jesus understands the future. That's the spin I'm taking on this Bible passage, Luke chapter 19, verses 11 through 27. And I don't know about you, but I've begun to become somebody who, as I try to please people, has become a gift card person. Sometimes I buy gifts, sometimes some people give me a gift, but gift cards are the thing to do. Now, really, here's why people make it easy for you to buy a gift card. People, retailers, want you to buy a gift card because chances are you're going to lose it. Even though they give that little paper or whatever, sometimes you get, you know, I bought one once for somebody, gave it to him as a gift, and said it didn't work. I took it back, and I had saved that little paper, and apparently a concern is, and they talked to me when I went to the QFC down on Redmond Way is where I got it, and they easily switched it for me. They said sometimes people will take those, and they'll manipulate the card around and get numbers, and they'll register it, and then they'll go home and spend it, and they just hang the card back up. So you want to be careful that when you get one, the paper's not ripped or torn, it's not bent, because it means somebody might have been fishing around with that. But the retailers say that that doesn't happen, you know, relatively that much compared to the fact that you and I are likely to buy a gift card, give it to someone, and they will choose not to lose it. Survey says 39.2% of us will purchase a department store gift card for friends or family. 33.4% of us will buy a restaurant gift card to give to somebody as a gift. However, believe it or not, there's a magazine, what a great title, The Journal of State Taxation. It's a real magazine, The Journal of State Taxation. The typical American home right now at your house, whether you're typical or not, has an average of $300 in gift cards in your possession that you have not used or you have lost. These cards are often misplaced, accidentally thrown out, or only partially redeemed. Between 2005 and 2011, $41 billion in gift cards went unused. Can you believe that? That's why they love to sell you the gift card, because only X percent of them, and I couldn't find a percentage, I just found total volume. $41 billion in gift cards go unused. It was a lot of energy, a lot of output that remains not put to use. Keep that thought in mind as we look at Luke chapter 19, picking up where we were last time. 19, 1 through 10 was a famous story, Jesus and Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, come down, come, I'm coming to your house, I'm coming to chat, and Jesus, the master, Jesus, the creator, Jesus, the great teacher, he's on his way to Jerusalem for the last time to get ready to give his life for us. Starting next Sunday, we'll start looking at Jesus coming into Jerusalem on that triumphal entry time. So this is while Jesus is on the way, while he's been on the way, we have seen him traveling. He was in Galilee. Across the Jordan, coming back, went through Jericho. This is where we had our previous story. So he is now sitting in Jericho at Zacchaeus' house. And as he is doing amazing things, he has talked about how this wealthy, powerful, corrupt man, Zacchaeus, because remember the tax collectors could, as long as they met their quota, they could keep anything else that they overcharged. And that was Zacchaeus' conviction, is he said, oh, I understand, I shouldn't be doing that, I will make up for all the hurt and pain I have caused. People are talking, look, Jesus went to this powerful man's house who doesn't listen to anybody. And remember previously, Jesus had talked up a story about prayer, about a judge who didn't care about anybody, didn't like people, didn't conform to the government. He did whatever he wanted. But because this lady is just nagging him and after him every day, she burdens him, and his heart melted and did what she wanted, not because he had compassion for her, but to get her out of the way. Jesus is using these kind of stories to illustrate to us persistence. Being continually active, doing the kinds of things you know that you should. And people are amazed at who he is, what he can do. Jesus is doing fewer and fewer miracles when he meets people. He heals a few people, but fewer fantastic miracles. More emphasis on what he has got to say, because he's going to very soon go up and have his last few days of life before he ascended to his Father. And he wants everybody to understand why he is here and what they should do as a result. So while they're at this dinner with Zacchaeus, and apparently a lot of people had come because he's feeling guilty, like Matthew Levi, when he followed Jesus, he threw a large meal. And he also confessed that he had overcharged people and he would make up for it and more. Zacchaeus seems to have also committed to make up for what he had taken and more. Very likely through this dinner for Jesus and invited anybody who could come, anybody who could fit in wherever it was his house. Most of the houses had a nice extended portico, a nice outside area. So probably a lot of people were at this meal and they're thinking, how amazing that the richest guy in town. Remember, there are three primary tax regions, and this Zacchaeus is the only person in our New Testament called a chief tax collector. So Jericho's was one of the three seats. So here's the richest guy in town who knows everybody, who knows where all the secrets are, who knows where all the secrets are buried. And so he can tap you on the shoulder and say, you know that? If you'll give me a little bit of skim off of that, I won't report you. Because he was in charge of a garrison of Roman soldiers. So he could cause a lot of trouble. This man, his heart changed. And when people see a life change, when people see a person acting different, acting compassionate, acting for the interests of others and not self-aggrandizement, people know something has changed. What caused them to change? So since Zacchaeus has changed and the people realize, they put the dots together, Jesus is on his way. Why? Because the great feast, Passover, is coming. Jesus is going up to Jerusalem now. And he's been talking about his kingdom. Maybe right now, Jesus is going to set up his kingdom at this Passover time. What a great time that would be. Because Jesus has been dropping some hints that things are about to change. They had the wrong idea as far as what was going to change. But things are going to change. And they're wondering, Jesus, is now the time? Are you going to essentially, Jesus, take over, get rid of the occupying force, set up your control, and of course, because you love us and we love you and you're going to set things up, all of us are going to come out winners, right? They wanted to be winners as if they had won an election or as they had won a prize. Or certainly, if my friend was there, they would help me out. They would give me a job. They would give me a bonus. They would give me a great position. By the way, on the side, the Seahawks aren't my favorite team, but I think it's kind of neat. They drafted that twin guy yesterday, isn't that? I think that's kind of cool, kind of a nice story. And I'm sure that was an influence on who they picked. So Jesus, sitting at that table with Zacchaeus, with the crowd, hear people talking, and because he's the Son of God, he knows what they're talking about. That they're expecting that just in a few days, Jesus is going to turn the world over and put them on top. Because if Jesus is on top, certainly they're going to be on top too. Jesus is going to squelch this rumor. Now, as they heard these things, he spoke another parable because he was near Jerusalem and because they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. We like to expect good things. We like to anticipate good things. Remember, even when we look at other things we're going to see in Luke and then in the other Gospels, you will see that the disciples begin to argue and discuss with each other, even on the way to what we'll generally call the Last Supper. They will discuss which of them is most important. Which of them will seat, because that's the position seating at the right hand of someone in Jewish thought, in Jewish honor, is the right hand of Benjamin, son of my right hand, the most important, my number one. So they were all expecting to be number one. Why? Because Jesus is there, certainly he's going to make all of us better immediately now because he can do anything. So Jesus is going to now begin to discuss what it means for him to be their master. Because remember, Jesus is now trying to screw down, focus down what it means to follow him. He's called his disciples to follow him. It's been about 3 years, 3.5 years almost for some of them since they began to walk with him and follow him, and he's changed their lives. And they're still trying to struggle to understand what he means. And today we'll kind of struggle. What does God want me to do? What should I say? What should I be doing? And then sometimes if God says something I don't like, maybe I don't understand, or I'm not sure how to put it into effect, some of the things we gladly hear, some things are a struggle. His disciples are hearing these things. And by the way, these words are focused. They're for the group, for everybody to hear, but primarily these are for Jesus' disciples. Because they're the ones that he has been focusing in, commissioning, training, getting ready, so that they will take over, turning over the world as he has started. So he's more concerned with their mindset and their conduct and their actions, and he knows they're going to get a shock because things are not going to happen in the way they expect. Remember, even though previously, just a little while ago in this book, he told them that he was going to be captured, he was going to be turned over to sinners, he was going to be abused, if you will, and then he would be killed, but that he would rise again. Remember the next verse said, and they understood what? None of these things. Because it's not what they expected. Even if somebody tells you what's going to happen, or tells you the truth, if it's not what you expect, sometimes it takes a while to sink in, or you think you must be wrong, or I don't understand. This is going on in their minds. Much is about to happen. And this trip to Jerusalem is not going to be something that opens up vacation and victory to them. Their lives are going to get perhaps even more complicated. So I'm going to show you a slide so I can have you every reason why you should leave, get up and leave after I show you this slide, because I'm going to tell you what this parable means. But I'm hoping that you're going to stay, okay? So you look at this parable. This is one of the last times Jesus is going to speak this way to his followers, perhaps the last time. So as he does this, Jesus is going to very clearly and plainly tell a parable about himself, the world that he is in, and the disciples that he is about to leave behind. So the nobleman is going to be Jesus, very plainly. The far country, he's getting ready to go to heaven to prepare a place for them, John 14. The servants are going to be the disciples. Interesting enough, there's going to be how many? 10 disciples. When Jesus first appeared to them after his resurrection, he appeared to the group. There were only 10 disciples in the room. Judas had gone ahead and done what he was going to do, and Thomas just happened to not be there. And then the mina, the amount of money we're going to talk about, is their business. Do business. Occupy till I come. What are they doing with the good news, the message that Jesus had come to give? When we talk about some of these Bible weights and measures, meaning we don't talk about that. When you contrast all these things, in summary, if you were an average person and were a day laborer, because this is an agricultural, rural communities generally, even in the cities, you probably had a job that was connected with agriculture somehow. If you were a farm worker, field worker, your day's pay was a drachma. Alexander the Great had gone through a few hundred years before and changed a lot of the lingua franca, the way people talked and thought, and people tended to, even here in Israel, where the shekel was the temple coinage, people would use Greek coins, Greek monetary system. The Romans would use Greek monetary system. So if you went out and worked all day hard in the field, you'd come home, hopefully they generally paid you cash every day, and the guy would be there with a bag of money, he'd hand you a drachma. A mina is 100 drachmas. So over 3 months' pay. So however that equates in culture and time, that's why I don't like to put a dollar figure on there, but it's just over 3 months' pay for a laborer. So the master is leaving, and he's going to pass on that amount of money to his friends. So the setting, like I said, very simply, this is Jesus. And what Jesus is doing is, again, he's speaking this for everybody to hear at Zacchaeus' house. But he's really focusing this on the disciples because their lives are going to change. And even they themselves, like he spoke plainly to them, they didn't understand. And they're not going to get what they expect. So as he tells this story, the certain nobleman himself is going to go to a far country to inherit another kingdom, to receive for himself this kingdom in return. So here's a guy who is already the heir apparent. Kind of like if you watch the news right now, Saudi Arabia has a king, but there's a new crown prince, and he's going around the world trying to make a lot of impact. He's kind of this country. He's trying to say, we're going to change things, and I want you to know who I am because I'm going to be the next king. So that's what it says. In his own country, this nobleman was going to be the next king. Oh, by the way, his family's influence was such that another kingdom was going to come under his control. So he's going to leave for a little while and set that up. While he does that, he has some people who are his close personal servants. So don't think of, when you think servant here, don't think of somebody who's rolling his socks or who's ironing his clothes. Think of somebody who is his program manager, his vice president of something. Because if you're going to be in politics, you're going to have a business. There's a lot of things, a lot of people who are going to be working, and you need some people to make sure that things go on. And one of the things you have to do is you have to make decisions, yes? You cannot make a decision. No decision is a decision. You have to realize that. You can't just put stuff off because if you don't decide, you miss out. So he needs to have people who have the ability to make a choice, to live with that choice, and to live with it or fix it. That's how Jesus is looking at his disciples. He's going to leave. They are going to be there on the earth as his personal chosen representatives to carry on the quote-unquote family business. The business of glorifying the Father, and in this case, glorifying the Father through the salvation, the deliverance, the redemption of humans. So as Jesus tells this story, as he leaves to go prepare for the future, about to ascend his Father, he tells them to do business till I come. Now, your King James Bible is going to say occupy till I come, but the point is be busy. In other words, while I'm gone and I am not here, a lazy worker, if the boss is gone, is going to spend his time on the company budget with donuts, coffee, whatever it is you do for snack time. Hey, let's go to a seminar this week. What's the seminar? I don't know, but we get to go to Vegas for a week, so let's go do it. Yes, we have budget for that. Yes, let's spend our budget. If the boss is gone, you don't want to look at that as a reason to do whatever you want. Just because your parents aren't here doesn't mean you're going to do whatever you want. Right, kids? Yes, your parents want you to. Yes, yes. Just because you're alone doesn't mean you should do things as if whatever, because, you know, somehow everything matters. So Jesus is saying, listen, I'm going to be gone, but that doesn't mean you're not supposed to do anything. If anything, you should be doing more. Because if people get home and see that you've been active, you've been busy, you did your schoolwork, stuff got cleaned, papers got filed, online work got done. If you do what you're supposed to do when somebody's gone, when you're not being personally watched, hey, that is a great character trait, isn't it? That's the kind of person you want to encourage, and that's the kind of person you're going to trust more. And that's part of the part of our story here is while he's gone, they're faithful, they're trustworthy, they're doing what they should do, and so they demonstrate that they can be counted on. They are reliable. They are able to know what they're supposed to do and do it and not be afraid to act. This is the point. They are to do business. They're to proclaim, in their case, the gospel and this gospel message, because everything should come under the influence of the gospel. If I lived in the United Kingdom and they wouldn't let my kid out of the hospital, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what you think when you see that sign, but that's the point we're going to make in this next section. Take a look here. Verse 14, his citizens hated him. So what we have here is we have a picture of the nobleman who's going to be the next king as he's going out to take possession of another chunk of property and come back. The citizens of the country that he is in hate, and it's very plain, they don't like him. They wish he was not their ruler. So forgive me, this contemporary picture just fits exactly in because sometimes presidents are controversial, yes? And so you either like or hate, or candidates like or hate, and a lot of people don't like. So this is not uncommon in politics, right? This is exactly the setting that Jesus paints, that the people who are in his future kingdom that he's currently in, that he's number two in, they're hoping that he does not take over. We can't stand him. We want to get rid of him. So these types of emotions and feelings that are reflected in this picture, Jesus says, are reflected in the way that the people of the earth of his day, and in some aspects of our day now, this is how they think of Jesus. We don't want him here. We don't want him to be in charge. We hope something happens to him. They're not going to succeed in Jesus' story getting rid of him. There's no term limit for Jesus to cash through. But I just put this up here because this is the exact sentiment that people that Jesus told the story about look at him. He commanded his servants because he gave them each these monies. And the point is, everybody got the same. There were his 10 servants that he gave them money, and he tells them, do business. And so it was that when he returned, having received the kingdom, he commanded these servants who had given them the money to come, to be called to him, they might know how much they had gained by trading. It says, how well did it go for you? Did you make money? Did you lose money? Did you invest? I have some friends who have some financial degrees who work for some of the bigger businesses. And it's funny, when kids I used to coach in basketball, and I have a house and a car, and they work for some of the Fortune 500s, and they're telling me about all the things they do. And they will tell me that, no, they had that in their class, where they had X amount of fictitious money, and through the course of the quarter, they would invest it, and at the end, it wasn't real money, but how had you done? Because they needed to learn how to trade, how to look at different things, how to anticipate splits and profit and loss. So, how have you done, he says, with the trust I gave you, and I demonstrated that I trusted you because I invested in you. I gave you real money to see how you would do. Now, I want you to notice the first, so who else would speak up, a guy who says the guy who did the best? Then came the first saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. When you look at this guy, you can tell why he was a good, successful worker. Why? Because he didn't say, I. He doesn't say, me, my. There's no criticism of other employees in there. Do you notice that? Even though he knows he's the best, he doesn't criticize. Remember, the Pharisee had said, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, including this guy in the back, who you're going to praise. He says, Master, where did I get this from? It was yours. You gave me from yours. Yours has earned 10. He gives humility and thanks for the opportunity to excel. Challenge, that's what challenge is, the opportunity to excel. The second is similar. Lord, what you gave me, the one you gave me, I have been able to bring in 5 more. So notice that these are responsible, humble, they have done a good job. Yeah, forgive me for the picture, but it just fit. So what does he do? Well done, good servant. You were faithful in very little. Have authority over 10 cities. Now, when I think of very little, suppose you're somebody who makes $60,000 a year, and you're looking at $15,000 of that being given to you to invest. I wouldn't think that was very little. But the owner, the king, he has a lot. Because if you're king, well, it's good to be king. And if you sneeze, 10 guys are around you with a Kleenex and a glass of water. So he has a lot in control. So he gives them what's a lot to them, but to him, it's not that much. Because, you know, like the song says, he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. So this noble now king, because now that he's returned, it seems that he has the farther kingdom that he has been able to succeed in getting. And now, whether his dad has died or has stepped aside for him, he now is king of all these places. And he praises them both. They used what they were given for the intent they were given, and they made a profit, and they were rewarded in proportion to their faithfulness. Jesus talks a lot about money and rewards. Some of it's kind of enigmatic, but I think this is the principle, that God blesses us once we trust him as our Savior, and that God has things for us to do. Ephesians 2:10 talks about the good works that God has given us to do. And whatever it is, God expects us to be faithful with what we see and to respond to the circumstances and roll with the changes. But whatever we do, do all to the what? Glory of God. Somehow honor and glorify God. And in this way, spreading the gospel is one of the key ways that they were expected to honor and glorify God. And they were rewarded in proportion. That seems to be the case for us. When you look at Corinthian letters and other places, one day we'll stand before that judgment seat of Christ. Well, he will look at us and evaluate us. How faithful were we with what God gave us? We didn't earn our salvation. It was a gift. We didn't produce our spiritual gifts. God gave them to us. How have we put them to use? And that little thing at the end of Matthew 28 about going and making disciples. How well are we doing with that? And that's what Jesus is focusing on, because that's what the apostles are all about. They're taking over Jesus' mantle. Well done, good and faithful servant. Because you've been faithful in little, you have authority over 10. The point is obvious. They're going to be given greater opportunity to find greater service for their king. So somehow when we're recognized by God, in the future, there are tasks in the new heaven and new earth. Who's going to get those? It won't be the angels. It's going to be us. You were faithful in very little. And this is the point. I'm sure they're very involved with whatever they're doing. Whatever you're doing is important to you because it's yours. In their spot, remember when their king had left, their future king had left, you could see what the populace thought about him. They didn't like him. They wanted to replace him. And yet they had to go, everyone knowing who they worked for, and do business. The populace had every reason not to listen, not to want to invest with him, but to want to do something else. So in a hostile environment, that's why Jesus is telling us, in a hostile environment, these people were able to find success. Jesus didn't save the best contact cards and give to the 10. No, he sent them out into a group of people that if they knew who you were, they wouldn't like you. Who do you follow? I can't understand that. So they were in a difficult circumstance and were successful anyway. And he says how small their responsibilities and tasks in comparison to the reward. So in a kingdom, there's a lot of places, a lot of land. We don't know. Jesus doesn't give us a lot of details. But as these people were successful, he gave them lands, municipalities, cities to manage. So if you work for the king directly and the king gives you a large area to manage, to make sure that the water's there, people aren't sick, the roads are there, the roads are safe, people can travel. If you do a good job, you can get rich in politics, yes? So that's the point we have here. If you're faithful with what God gives you, and God gave all of them the same in this passage, their faithfulness would directly indicate their reward for the future. Somehow that God is telling us something about what our experience is going to be like in heaven. Then another came, verse 20. Master, here is your amount of money, which I have kept put away in a handkerchief. Now, I want to mention something on the way by. Their economy was similar to ours. They just didn't have credit cards and checks. But they had cash exchange. You could be able to write notes. You could borrow money. You had obligations. You could put liens on things. But there were some general guidelines that were written. And apparently, this concept of the handkerchief is that if you were a worker for a manager, like if you're a project manager at a business, and they gave you this scenario, this very scenario is mentioned in contemporaneous law. If you were given money and told to put it to use, it was actually said that it was not legal to bury it, to wrap it up, or to ignore it. Because if you had the job, part of your job was risk management. Yes. And so you had to be able to use and invest that, and you could lose your job for doing what this person has said. So I'm throwing that in because people who are hearing the story would have known that. You would have known that if you had the job, you had to do something. Good or bad, you had to do something. So they would know that this person was A, breaking the equivalent of their securities law, B, this person was afraid. He thinks the master's pleased just because he didn't lose what he was given. Why did he think he was given it? Why are we given gifts? Why are we given things? Just to look at? To keep it a secret so he wouldn't be robbed? He made the wrong choice. You can't just stay in bed all day. You can't be so afraid that you don't say anything. And notice, this worker thinks he's being wise by holding on to this, but you can tell in his heart that he doesn't respect his master. I feared you, in IKA, I have contempt for you because you have the reputation of being cheap. And these words also make it sound like he's dishonest. And the idea of squeezing blood out of a turnip is definitely included in this imagery. You collect what you did not deposit. You reap what you did not sow. In other words, you're tight, you're exacting, and there's a little bit of suggestion that he's criminal. How did you come up with this money? Senator, I have no recollection. That's what they're expecting him to say. So this man is exposed as A, not being respectful, B, he's not in a position where he should be in because he's not a manager, because he's afraid to do anything, and three, he thinks something funny is going on and he perhaps doesn't want to get involved with it because he doesn't really believe in it. He is smearing his king. He is accusing his king of being unfair. He's accusing him of that publicly out loud in front of the other managers. What does the king do? Out of your own mouth I will judge you. Notice, you wicked servant. The point of the parable is, listen, if you really thought that I was tough, why didn't you work harder? Why didn't you do something? You know you should do something, at least deposit with the moneylenders. You've seen the imagery when Jesus went in and kicked over tables. There were tables that were out where people would come from all around and exchange their money. Banking philosophy was kind of in its infancy. You had individuals who had some cash from themselves or from investors, just like modern day banks, who would exchange money. And how much fee would there be for exchanging for local currency so you can do business? This is the very least you should have let this at the money label, because they also made short-term business loans, micro loans or large loans. Because these are agrarian people, oftentimes the concept of micro loans, like you'll see in different parts of the world that we do today, they were doing back then. At the very least, you should have deposited this money for like a 100-day CD as you're giving it out knowing I'm going to come back. And then I could have at least collected interest. So he said, you wouldn't even go, you were so lazy, you wouldn't even go to the bank, and even if it's, what, 0.25? You wouldn't even give me that. He did not do the least he could have done. And that's the perspective. He did something that A, was already decried as being incorrect to do in public. You shouldn't be just sitting on it. Number two, he wouldn't even put it in the bank so that he could get some interest on it. He just sat there and held on to it and thought, you're going to be happy that I just was here. And aren't you glad you have me for an employee? Nobody mugged me. Doing nothing sometimes is worse than doing something, yes? Because if you start moving, it's easier to change direction. Sometimes when it's time to make a decision, make a decision. And if it's wrong, you can fix it. But if you just sit there, pretty soon you sink so deep in the mud or are surrounded by so much grass and moss, you can't move. For I say to you that everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Because the point is, the money he was given was not his. And he was acting as if it was his, because his master, his lord, his future king told him, I'm giving you this to do something with, not just to sit there and be glad that you have it, because it's not really yours, it's mine. And I'm giving it to you so that you can at least learn. There's a value to making a wrong decision because you learn not to do it again, or learn to do it a different way, or being able to adjust. You know, I coach sports sometimes. Sometimes you're trying something, it's not going to work. It's time to do something different. Change while you're going on. If this guy was trying to learn business principles, if it's not working, he missed the chance to see if he was good at anything. And he was wicked. He was evil. Why? At the very least, he did not do what he was told. At the very most, it discerns, the master is able to discern, you don't trust me. You don't like me. You think I'm getting ahead. And because you don't want to think I'm getting ahead because maybe I have better skills or superior position or whatever, but you think there's something crooked going on, which is why I have more than you do. Because for whatever reason, he disrespected his master. By the way, he says, take what was given to him and give it, verse 24, to the one that has 10. They said, listen, he already has 10. He says, listen, I want a track record. If I see somebody who's got a good track record, I'm going to give them more. Do you ever notice, this is an aside, but this is from the situation, that it seems like sometimes the more good you do, the more you feel punished, yes? So don't agree too loud. You can just sit there and nod your head and think in your mind. But if you do good things, if you help people, suddenly it seems like there's no end. I have to do this. Well, I did this for him. I need to do it again. Or, you know, and you can think of the limits that go along with this. You know, don't let somebody necessarily take advantage of you. Don't let somebody hurt you. But the more you do and the more effective you are at it, people are going to hear, they're going to come to you, yes? That's expected. The more you do and you're able to manage it, and contemporaneously for in our lives, you're able to honor God while you're doing it. You can take care of all this and this. You can add this into. Somebody will come on with us. I'll put some more water in the soup or whatever it is. You're doing a good job and you're investing your life, and it seems like there is a never-ending opportunity to do more. Guess what? You're doing the right thing. And the thing somebody else should have done that they will not do, it needs to get done. And God might slide over to your plate. But Jesus is telling the story so that you know one day when you get up to heaven, well done, good and faithful servant. You were able to manage this and not just that, you will have more reward, more understanding of my glory, a greater position in the future because you've been responsible with the few things you have now. So if you have to pick up the extra socks, or do an extra load of laundry, or do an extra trip, or whatever it is that you plug in when you do, it's an aspect of this. Jesus is watching. Somebody needs something. Somebody else didn't do it. That's why there's a need. So the person who should have used their gifts that God gave them to meet that need and refuse, Jesus is in the need. He's also in the meeting of the need. So Jesus slides them to you. So, like no good deed goes unpunished. Sometimes that's how we respond, and we shouldn't respond that way. I know I have to admit, sometimes you think that way. But if you make a difference, God bless you, because the world needs difference makers. What about those enemies of the kings? The ones who said, I don't want to have him. I hope something happens to him. I hope maybe he'll get assassinated on his trip, or maybe he'll get sick. Those enemies of his who do not want me to reign over them, slay them before me. One day when Jesus returns, the Bible says, kiss the Son that he will be angry with you, Psalm 2, and that Jesus is going to rule with a rod of iron. Jesus is meek, compassionate, lowly, honors his Father, but you're not honoring the law if you disobey it, correct? So, have you seen there's all these stories? Here's a guaranteed weed. People say, oh, you know, if you're driving down the road and you don't want to get pulled over for speeding, here's what you should do. What do? Don't speed. If you don't want to get pulled over for expired tabs, I need to take care of that Monday or Tuesday. Keep your tabs up. So if you do the right thing, you shouldn't get in trouble for it. Jesus takes delight in rewarding his children, not punishing the wicked, but God is just. And one day there's going to be resolution for us. Using the gospel properly will enrich both ourselves and others. Because using the gospel and living under God's control, everything is his gift. Everything is owned by him. I'm his manager. I'm his steward. It's not because of me, not because of works of righteousness which I have done, but because of his mercy has saved me. If I do that with a good, thankful attitude like these people, they didn't say, oh, you should have heard the AND campaign. Oh, you should have seen all the extra, oh, you should have seen the extra time. No, what you gave me has been able to produce more. Because we as humans have a tendency to FSFS, feel sorry for ourselves. Amen. So God doesn't want me to feel sorry for being a Christian. Yeah, I'm a Christian, it's so terrible. Why, I sat down and prayed and people looked at me funny and I'm sure they're going to put something in my food. I won't be ridiculous. But sometimes we act that way, that being a Christian, oh, I'm so happy to be in Jesus today. Don't do that. Get over that, okay? Yes, yes. Neglecting our gospel duties will make us poor in this world and the one coming eventually. Because this is what God has us to do. God wants us to go out and live for him. And we must show concern for our Lord and his word. This is a snapshot, screenshot of the St. Peter and St. Mary's Church in Stowmarket, UK. Over 10 years ago, December 2005, Reverend Michael Eden threw out a challenge to his congregation. It was a congregation that was established. You can see they have a nice stone building, big group of people, and they had lots of money. And people were coming to their church, and they were happy, but they were not getting involved, A, with each other, and B, with the people around them. So the pastor gave a challenge to his congregation. Repairs were needed for the church's structure, and he decided, you know what, we're not just necessarily going to spend money. What can we do to do something about this? He gave 90 parishioners, 2005, 10 pounds each after preaching on the message I just did and said, go forth and multiply. One person spent their 10 pounds on baking ingredients, had a bake sale, and made $750. Another person spent their 10 pounds on wool, made $138 selling scarves. At the end of the church, I don't know how much they needed, but this was like an experiment for them. At the end of the church, made $9,200 on an investment of 900 pounds. So dollar pounds, which I don't know. Pounds are worth more than dollars, is all I can tell you. But the point was they put into effect what they were asked. And Jesus' words here, to everyone who has, more will be given. So, if you can't think of the last time you did something in obedience to God or to help one of your friends, there is something that is wrong. Because somewhere along the line, if you love God and people, you're going to invest yourselves. Invest yourself in God and invest yourself in others. For where your treasure is, what? There is your heart also. Because if you do something for somebody, it's probably going to cost you. It might only cost you a couple bucks for gas. Might cost you, I don't know what. But you're going to invest yourself if you get involved with anything. Getting involved with anything costs. Yes? Yes. I mean, if your kid plays ball, good for you. And then when you come home from the sports store, are you sure you're going to play ball? Same thing for all of us. But God says, do business until I come. He knows what you have, and he won't ask any more from you than he's given you. But our thing is, don't get hung up. Don't get angry. Don't get cynical about where you are in life with God. God has given you these opportunities. What are you doing with them? Would you stand up with me as we sing hymn number 444? I'll go where you want me to go. Because this is the point. Whatever God is, he has people for you to meet, and how will you influence them for him and for the gospel? I'll go where you want me to go. God, help us to honor you with our lives, and help us to honor you most by being a Christian all the time. Let us have the opportunity for people to know about you, and help us to demonstrate you here and when we leave here. Help us to be patient. Help us to be encouraging. Help us to be forgiving. Help us to be a good example and the person you want us to be. Help us to determine what are the opportunities you give us to serve you. Because when we serve you, we're going to do something that connects with other people. We don't live in a monastery. We live in the world. Help us to make a difference for the people that you will introduce us to. In Jesus' name, and everybody said,